Welcome to week number one. This week we take on two topics, the legal framework of public education, which is chapter one in your book, and the topic of torts, which is chapter two. Let's begin with the legal framework of public education, for it is this chapter that is a foundation for everything else that we're going to discuss in this course. For those of you who didn't much appreciate your government class in high school, I'm afraid there might be a little deja vu here, because Chapter 1 is a lot about learning the court structure, learning the role of public education constitutionally, the differences between the federal and the state government. Well, if this is not your forte, just hang in there, slug through that first chapter, and I promise you it will get intensely more interesting as the course rolls on. In fact, by the time you get to torts, I think you're going to find that there's a lot of interest here and applicability to the things you see every day, whether you're a teacher or administrator in a public school. Well, let's talk about that legal framework of public education. One of the things that I hope you did remember from that high school government class is that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. And so it's the Constitution and what the U.S. Supreme Court says about it that we look to as the highest legal authority for all legal questions related to education. And so we perk up particularly when the Supreme Court has to say something about education. Well, interestingly enough, the Constitution itself says zero about public education. In fact, the 10th Amendment, interestingly enough, says if there is a power that is not specifically granted to the federal government, the national government, then it is a power reserved to the state governments. And because of this 10th Amendment, public education is legally regarded as a matter for each state to control and to regulate. Now, each of the 50 states has made public education a fundamental right for every child between a certain age. And so this is our beginning point. Now, you might be saying, okay, if public education is a state issue, and it's governed by state law, how come there are so many federal laws and there seem to be so much federal influence in education? Well, that's a great question. I mean, who among us hasn't heard of No Child Left Behind? How about IDEA or Section 504 or the American with Disabilities Act? How about FERPA or the Equal Access Act? These are all pieces of legislation that specifically deal with public education. And so we have to wrap our mind around the fact that even though public education is a state issue, there's a great deal of federal regulation involved in public education. Well, how does this work? Well, let me tell you just briefly, and this is a very brief description of how we get there. But the Constitution says in the General Welfare Clause that the federal government, Congress in particular, can pass laws that are meant for the general welfare of the country. And so you will find a lot of legislation that is passed for the general welfare of this country. Legislation that encourages students to do well in math and science. And if states are willing to obey those laws, the federal government gives them money as incentive and encouragement to do so. And so it's primarily through the power of the purse string that the federal government has power and influence in public education. Let's use No Child Left Behind as an example. Any one of the states could walk away and say, we're not going to participate in No Child Left Behind. The trade-off, however, is that a state has to be willing to turn back those federal dollars that are attached to that piece of legislation. You'll see, from time to time, a state that will say, we're considering not participating in No Child Left Behind, or we don't want to participate in this abstinence-only program, or this other program. And what they're really saying is, the cost might outweigh the benefit to us. We're not sure we want to take those federal dollars. Many of the articles that you're going to see on the discussion board this week in the current Legal Events Forum are meant to demonstrate this relationship between the state government and the federal government, this tension or this relationship between the two. Now, this might be a good time for me to tell you that these articles that I put out there every week on the discussion board, I see something in these articles that relates to the topic that we're discussing that may not always be apparent to you. And if that's the case when you read an article and you're not sure how to apply what we're reading or how it connects, just move on to a different article. It's no big deal. Let somebody else try to make that connection. But please, make sure that when you're discussing these articles, that you do so in a way that is substantive, in a way that adds something that's meaningful. Take what you're learning in Chapter 1 and then apply it to this real-life article that's out there, to this current legal event, and explain the relevance. And that's what I'm trying to get at with the current legal events. It's an opportunity to apply what we're reading and what we're learning and to discuss it in a way that I think is relevant. And I hope that you'll agree. Okay, well, let's turn our attention then to the court structure or the legal structure, generally speaking, so that when we talk about different topics in this course, we can kind of identify what the source of the law is. And that's very important because we may be dealing with a state law, a federal law, a state case, a federal case. If it's a federal case, we could be dealing with a federal district court, and that's one judge and maybe a jury, or a federal circuit court of appeals case, which may be a three-man jury, or maybe as many as 16. Or we may be looking at the U.S. Supreme Court, which is 9 individuals, 9 justices. So there is a wide variety of places where the law comes from. We also could be just looking at regulations, like the U.S. Department of Education's regulations. They may not have the force of law, but they are semblance of legal authority, something that we can look at as authority and guidance with regard to the law. And so there are all these different sources. I want to encourage you to look in the week number 1 folder in the course documents area, because there you will see a 1-page diagram of the state court system here in Michigan as well as the federal court system. And that gives you an idea of how many different courts we may be talking about when we're looking at a case. I want you to think about whether we're looking at a federal case or a state case, a federal law or a state law. Is this something that's coming out of the legislature or is it coming from the courts? And I also want you to think about whether the jurisdiction it comes from is relevant to us. For example, if the Michigan State Supreme Court hands down a case, that's meaningful to us because we're bound by that case. If the Iowa Supreme Court, by contrast, hands down a case, it doesn't apply to us. Now, it may be instructive on some level and may be interesting. We may be able to draw application from it, but it's not legally binding. So I want you to be in tune to that, and especially when you're looking at federal cases, because a lot of cases in your book that aren't from the Supreme Court are from different circuit courts of appeals. And if you look in Chapter 1, you'll see a description of all the different circuit courts of appeals and what states fall under what circuit. We are in the 6th Circuit Court of Appeals. That includes Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee. And wherever that case originates from in those four states, as long as the 6th Circuit Court of Appeals hands it down, That is binding authority on us. So we're very interested in anything that comes from the U.S. Supreme Court, anything that comes from the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, anything that comes from the Western or Eastern District of the State of Michigan in terms of a federal district court case. And we're interested, of course, in any kind of Michigan state case that applies to education. Okay, you should be familiar with the Revised School Code. That is the body of law here in Michigan that contains all the laws related to education, or I should say most of them, that have been passed by our state legislature. And so you want to be very familiar with that. And I have links to that in the web resources area of Blackboard. Okay, I think that I've given you a little bit of a flavor for Chapter 1, and I'm going to let you dive into it. If you have questions about what you're reading, please don't hesitate to post a question for me in that Q&A folder on Blackboard. Hey, I hope you have a good week. Enjoy your reading. Get into Chapter 2 as soon as you're done with Chapter 1, and let's talk about torts next.